8. It's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665. Lots to talk about tonight, as we may have just seen the Colts season end effectively. There's still a few games to play and a very important game this weekend against Houston, but a 51-16 loss. On the road at Jacksonville, not really the way to inspire confidence, unless you want to look back about 10 years to 2006 and think that this team is going to get healthy and make the turnaround that that team did to win the Super Bowl. I suppose anything's possible, but we'll talk about their effort in Jacksonville and a very bad second half here in a little while. IU football Hoosiers of Kevin Wilson. Still no extension on the board yet, to our knowledge, for Kevin Wilson, but they are heading to a bowl game in just about 2 weeks, the 26th in New York. So bowl season kicking off this coming Saturday, along with, of course, another long weekend of NFL football. But before we go any of those directions, we'll go with the live in-season Indiana Hoosier basketball team of Tom Crean, a pair of wins over during the week over a pair of overmatched opponents, as you would expect, in IPFW and McNeese State. And the Hoosiers scored 195 points in two games and gave up 125. What, if anything, do you take from games against these cupcakes? Look, we know you can't look at it and say they're going to be competitive, and there's a lot of strategy that necessarily has to come out of it. But what you got to do is, in my opinion, you got to get back to fundamentals where you need them and try to cut down on the mistakes you've been making. And I think that's the question. First question is, Glass, did they do that? Did they do the basics of what they can do? Because, you know, coming out of it, you're not going to come out with the idea that they're suddenly going to win the national championship because they beat McNeese State.
Well, let's keep it simple. If you're not going to be better at it against IPFW and McNeese State, well, you're never going to be better at it. So, yes, they were better. But it's all relative, because it's Tom Crean said it's going to be a mindset. And, again, you can flip that switch for 10 minutes. You can flip that switch for 5 minutes. And you look down and you're up 30 points. And, I mean, are you playing the same way you do in the first 5 minutes that you are in the last five of the half or the first five of the second half when you're up 20, 30 points? And I think if you watched enough of that game, no is the answer. And it's just something that isn't going to come overnight. You have to be patient with it. And they have to find a way to stay focused longer. But when teams are bad, it's hard to do that, because bad teams take bad shots and make
by 40 points.
Bad decisions,
yeah.
And everything else. I was watching the McNeese State game for a few minutes today. I went out to dinner Saturday night because I wasn't going to watch it. They're going to win by 40 points. I won by 45. There wasn't anything to watch there. But when I turned it on and watched it, they were up 25 points, and I watched four possessions where somebody shot. Our guy just runs around and they get an offensive rebound and put it back in, and another guy can't beat a guy right in front, or can't keep a guy in front of him off the dribble, picks up a foul, picks up this, goes and shoots a one pass three, and it's same old stuff. But when you're better than teams, you don't have to play perfectly, and that's what gets lost in all this. And as we've seen throughout the weekend, as we've seen throughout the last couple of weeks, there is two levels of the Big Ten. There is Michigan State, Penn State, or Michigan State, Purdue, and Maryland,
yep,
and everybody else.
And it's
not even close.
And it gets really bad at the bottom now.
And if you're in that anybody else category, and you're Indiana, and you're scoring 100 points a game, and you're beating really bad teams handily, which some teams in the league aren't beating bad teams handily. Now, they're beating better, or they're getting beat by perhaps.
There's some ugly losses in the
Big
Ten.
There are,
so
there's
far.
Ugly losses everywhere, by the way. But
yes.
Indiana, again, hasn't had any since Maui, so you can argue, well, that's a little bit better. Indiana's not losing to mid-major teams. They're not. They're beating bad teams, and there is a difference in that. At least the confidence is there. At least the offensive execution is there. Like we talked last Wednesday, the offense has to go. So for them to commit everything to defense to get it percentage points better, that's not going to worry. But what did you see on Wednesday night? Well, you saw Troy Williams grab, 18 or 19 rebounds, whatever it was, and you wondered, geez, why can't you do that on a lot of those nights?
14 in the first half.
Sure. Yogi Ferrell had a career high in assists. Is that true as well?
A career high? I'd have to look
season
at
season high, whatever it was. It was a lot. Robert Johnson made 5
of
5.
He's had a lot of assists this year, by the way.
Made 5 of 5 3-pointers. That, I know, was a career best, going 5 for 5 from the 3-point line. So you do all that and you beat IPFW by 25. In beating by 45, beating by 25. Right. So there's obviously things.
Well, and you need 38 out of Yogi and a good second half to win that particular game. Easier against McNeese.
I'm sorry. It was
the points, yes.
The assists for Yogi were McNeese. The good assist night was against McNeese. And the big 38 point. See how that just falls off? You don't remember a guy scored 38 points because you don't. It just doesn't matter when you're playing teams like that. It was a very efficient night for Yogi. That was, I think, what I'll take from that. What was he, 12 of 18, 10 for 10, something in that range to get his 38 points. That's very solid, and that's usually smart basketball because if you're hitting that many shots, you don't take that many bad ones and that many bad ones go in a night. So that was a very solid performance. Sorry, I wasn't knocking Yogi on that. But you had Yogi career high 38, Troy career high 19 rebounds, Rob Johnson career high in threes, but you never – It was what it was, and that's good.
No, it took a while to jump all over IPFW.
But you should be able to take teams apart like IPFW. That's why you schedule them at home. That's why you play them at home, is to work on all of these things to get yourself better. And that's going to be the thing where you hope when you're playing teams like this, you can work guys into the rotation and get them meaningful minutes and let them look at how – it works in game speed. And that night, Thomas Bryant really didn't have much of an effect on the game.
No, 18 minutes, 4 points.
Two rebounds.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you're the math guy to help me out with here, max it out to 40 minutes a game, and you're looking at 8 points and four rebounds.
Right.
That's not things that jump off the page and say is great, and then Thomas Bryant comes back against a McNeese State team that has no size and absolutely dominates.
Right.
So, yeah, it's getting everybody better. It's getting everybody in the flow of everything. It's getting guys more game minutes, and that's all you can do. Because once the schedule's made, Dave, I'm not sure what else you can do about it. You got to play the way it is. And there's one thing that will never be taken away from this Indiana team, never, ever, ever, is
beating
when
Creighton.
They play offense and they play smartly and they spread the basketball, they lead the country in field goal percentage, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I mean,
their best defense is making shots and getting you out of their jet wash.
Look,
I
get the issue when it comes to turnovers. I get the issue when it comes to defense. I'm right there with you. The only thing I can't decide, and until you see all the results, I don't know that you know for sure, is does a really good offense that plays its best – near its best a lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the time, is that enough to win enough games in the Big Ten? That's the question. Everyone seems to think the answer is absolutely not, and that might be the case. You got to be better defensively against the better teams in the Big Ten. There's no question. Last year we saw us basically give up season highs to several teams in the Big Ten, and outside of that. So if you continue that, it's going to be really hard, and you put all the pressure on your offense. But that again is the strength of the team. The strength of your team is always going to have the most pressure to produce, and that's going to be this team. This team is not suddenly going to become shut down defensively.
No, it's not.
It needs to do better with the ball, and it needs to do better rebounding, and that might just make up for the deficiencies it has over there.
Man, a couple things I think this team and fans have learned over the first however, what are you, 10 games in here, 11 games in,
11.
Is Thomas Bryant is not a shot blocker.
No.
Thomas Bryant is absolutely a really not. Big fella who is long, who plays hard. He gets up and down the court pretty well, but he is not a quintessential defensive player.
No, he's not Patrick Ewing.
Well, so when everybody before the season started plugged in a McDonald's All-American over here, they said it would be nice.
And our defense is going to be great because
he's
got his presence in the middle.
Yes, and now we can do this and do that. Yep. And teams have found what? Well, if you get Thomas Bryant 20 feet away from the basket and attack him on pick and roll, he's even further away from any of the
and
action
doesn't know how to
distract shots, to make you think about taking the ball into the lane.
Right.
It's been completely different. Max Bielfeld's been a nice player. He's a very nice player. He's had his best games against the competition. That has not been the strongest.
Honestly, we've had the best thing possible out of Max Bielfeld. I mean, so far, he's been great.
Against the teams that...
Understood. But, hey, what else did we expect out of Max Bielfeld?
Well, that's the depth you replace. If you ask me right now, would I rather have senior Hanna Pereira and sophomore Emmett Holt or these two, it's easy. It's not even close.
Yeah.
It's not even close. But, again, that hasn't solved anything defensively. They haven't grabbed 20 rebounds on average a game. They haven't blocked any shots to talk about.
No, I mean, Max isn't a big guy.
Well, he's a big guy, but he's not as
a
big guy that we needed
to
be a big guy. There's a reason, folks, he was a sixth man for a 16-16 Michigan team last year.
Sure.
There's a reason. There's a reason why. And to fit in here and try to figure out what's going on, great. But he's a serviceable player. He should understand the rigors of the Big Ten. He should understand what it takes to get into position. He should understand what it takes to guard at that level. And we'll see, because that's the thing. Against McNeese State, when you win by 450 points, I mean, you score 53, 52 and a half. I mean, it's great that you kept McNeese State to, what, 20, 21 in the second half? But don't point out the shot 43 in the first half. Don't do that, because that'll hurt all your arguments about the defense changing and getting back into the right frame of mind.
Still plenty of questions. We knew they wouldn't be answered this week, but this coming weekend we might know more about it, of course, as they play Notre Dame in what is going to become a very, very interesting doubleheader, because you got Purdue and Butler, also two very good teams.
Game number two.
Be fun up in Indy this weekend. We'll talk a little bit more looking forward for the Hoosiers when we get back from the break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on Newstalk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. We're with you until 7:45, where the national broadcast of Monday Night Football and the pregame takes over. New York is at Miami tonight. The Colts have Miami on the schedule. Down the road, Houston is upcoming this week in what is a huge game now in the division, as both teams are tied. Suddenly Jacksonville's half a game, or a game behind, rather. But a big, big game next weekend in Indianapolis. Houston has never won in Indianapolis. We'll talk about the Colts here in a little while. But first, some more IU basketball. They have the week off, as most everyone in town, at least students, do for finals week. And then they go up to Indianapolis on Saturday, part of the doubleheader, the Crossroads Classic. Butler and Purdue playing in the other game, so it's going to be a pair of good games, Notre Dame and Indiana. We will find out a lot more about Indiana in the game this weekend. I was talking off the air. Ken Pom runs all these statistics and rankings and things like that. He's got right now the best offensive teams statistically, his adjusted offense. Indiana is ranked fourth. Notre Dame is ranked second. He's got his adjusted defenses. Indiana is ranked 106th. Notre Dame is ranked 134th. So at least statistically, those major categories, and that is all at this point in time, very similar on paper. Notre Dame has lost to Monmouth as one of their two losses, who's, by the way, has got a couple good wins, so we're not going to discredit Monmouth
UCLA,
tonight.
USC.
Yeah, so they've got a couple good ones on their schedule. But these look, at least statistically, like very, very similar teams, and certainly in their makeup, some very good backcourts for both teams.
Yes, they are, and Notre Dame has figured out the way to play their way is to get up and down the court and shoot and shoot and shoot. And you saw last year in the tournament when they gave Kentucky all they wanted. I believe that was in a regional final. I believe that game was in the 70s or 80s.
Sweet
easy.
16 or regional final. It was the second weekend.
And Willie Cauley-Stein sprinted 94 feet down the corner to block the shot at the end.
That's right.
That was an amazing play. But Notre Dame had no problem taking it right to Kentucky because they're not afraid to score. And I think in this day and age, if you don't have the depth, Notre Dame's only playing seven and a half, eight guys. If you don't have the bodies to get in there and bang, you better knock down some shots. They got a good point guard. They got solid shooters all around them. They got decent inside play. Yeah, there's a reason why they do it, because they can spread you out. They're very similar to what Indiana is. They've got guys that can knock down the shot. They got guys that can handle the ball. They got guys that can play around the rim and are athletic. So you're going to be playing a team that looks in the mirror. So that's going to be, I don't know, a different watermark. Duke kind of played that way. Duke is not known as a lockdown defensive team, and they just ran by you because you let them.
They like to spread you out and get to the basket.
Would you learn? I mean, Notre Dame is, I don't want to say it's on Duke's level of talent, but they're close, playing the same league.
Well, they're at least Indiana's, if not better.
They've beaten Duke in the last couple of years, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. and they're there. They're legitimate. They can play. And in the week off between it's finals week and you're going to practice at weird times because everybody's got finals at weird times and everything else, yeah, it is a little adversity. It's not set up where you bring in McNeese State. It's not set up where you bring in IPFW. You bring in some of these other teams on your whenever you want them to come in and play when it's convenient for you. Now you've got to go out and play it. And, Dave, looking at the wins right now, I'm not talking about the league. I'm talking about the wins right now in Indiana's makeup. Creighton's it.
Yeah.
So if you don't beat Notre Dame, now you go in the Big Ten season. We just told you how bad the bottom of the league is in the Big Ten currently. Where are you going to get – you got to get some wins. You put the pressure on yourself to go 13-5, 12-6, finish in the top five of the league. That's what's going to happen.
Exactly
so
right.
The first step in that direction is Saturday against Notre Dame. And Indiana fans that want Indiana to be competitive, don't call this program. Don't. I don't want to hear about competitive. It's Indiana University. It's year, what is this, 7 or 8 of Tom Crean's run?
Eight.
You're not talking about being competitive anymore. These are games you win.
Yeah.
These are games you win. Don't talk to me about McNeese State. Don't talk to me about IPFW. No, go beat somebody. Go beat somebody. You had three chances in Maui. You got one of them. Now go beat somebody.
333-2665 is our phone number.
You got to beat people to get in the tournament. You got to beat people to get confidence. You got to get. You got to beat people in your league, not on your home court.
Wins are a criteria.
If you want to be better than average, and that's what we talk about in this program, we don't talk about what Indiana does to be average or good. We want them to be a team that contends. We want a team that contends for championships. I think that's fair. Let's see what Jay thinks.
Let's see what Jay. Let's bring Jay, are you here? How are you, Jay?
I'm great, guys.
Am I off my rocker?
You're on your bully pulpit tonight.
Am I off my rocker? Am I expecting Indiana to be good? That's not acceptable for me.
You're preaching to the choir. I've been saying the same thing for 3 years. It starts with recruiting. I think we're losing recruits to teams we shouldn't be losing recruits to. I think we're offering scholarships to kids that are just role players for us. We're not. I don't think we treat ourselves outside of maybe the fan base and the administration. I think you have a staff that doesn't treat us like we can be an elite program and we should be an elite program. The mediocrity has been accepted and just getting to the NCAA has been accepted. And it goes back to the end of the Coach Knight days of, his last 10 years of being here. They just accepted getting to the NCAAs, and that was good enough because he lived off of his old resume. And I think
resume's pretty good though. Over
and I understand it, but what I'm getting at here is, and I'm agreeing with you that we need to stop living on our laurels of a 1987 national championship or being the last undefeated team and bringing those guys back and lauding them and thank you very much and have a nice day kind of thing. We need to start being the present and the now and being on the national scope and being relevant again. And unfortunately, like you said, it's year seven and we're not relevant. We're getting beat by a bad ACC Wake Forest team, and people are getting excited because we're putting 100 points up on a team that had one win against an NAIA school and lost to a Division III.
I don't know who's lauding the McNeese State win. Let's be fair there. You want to live in the moment, and I'm with you there. The moment right now is heading up to Notre Dame. So
right,
what does that mean this week, and what does that mean in Notre Dame?
But what I'm getting at here is you can even go let's even talk other sports. You can go back to the Bob Morgan days of Indiana baseball when he would schedule School of the Blind and get 20 wins, and then all of a sudden Indiana baseball, we won 30 games. Well, against who? So my thing is, I understand you can't schedule the Dukes and the Kentuckys and the Louisvilles and top 10 teams for your entire schedule. But there's nothing against scheduling the Sun Belt champion, the Ohio Valley champion, the Conference USA champion. Schedule more competitive teams to get yourself prepared for Big Ten play. So like you're saying right now, Glass, about how if they don't win this Notre Dame game, what is their resume looking like?
Great.
Well, if they would play more competitive non-conference games against these champions of the lower conference schools and win, it helps your RPI.
Nobody cares if you played Monmouth instead of Moorhead State or McNeese State. They care that you beat Wake Forest, and that's legitimate. We should have beat Wake Forest.
Yeah.
We are in a better spot and should be in a better spot right now on a neutral court to beat Wake Forest. And then turn it around and UNLV also. Those are not untalented teams, but this team right now should have beat those teams.
Those are teams you should schedule, and those are teams you should beat.
That's the difference, is you didn't beat them.
If I would have taken the Indiana High School All-Stars and put them out there against Indiana University, would it have been that much different than playing a McNeese State team?
Now, the high school kids would hit more threes.
And that's what my point is.
I agree.
Other than it being a game action, a game setting, how are you helping your young kids develop, your team develop against relevant talent when you play teams like McNeese State? You're not, and that's why they go unprepared against a team like Duke, against these better teams, because they play a lesser opponent, they score a bunch of points, they have this confidence about them, and then they go in against a better opponent, more talented players, they start playing underneath, they start getting banged around, and they're like, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this. This is not what I'm used
to. Why do we play Southern Illinois in football and then almost lose? I mean, look, you got to have a schedule something out.
Unfortunately,
you got to beat Wake, you got to beat UNLV, you got to be more competitive with Duke and maybe even win that game. and then you've got to beat Notre Dame. And that's I don't think those are unreasonable expectations at all.
You can't compare a basketball and a football schedule. Football, you play 12 games. Basketball, you play 30-some games. So why do you have so many cupcakes on your schedule? That's all that my point is.
How many cupcakes do we have?
In football, you're trying. In football, we're trying to get to the point where we're consistently in bowl games. So you play a little bit less competitive schedule so that you can get your four wins, so that you can get closer to bowl eligibility. We're talking about Indiana basketball here, a team that's won five national championships.
Well, the argument
shouldn't be playing these classes.
The argument,
we're not pulling the wool over anybody's eyes by beating Eastern Illinois. The committee's not going to look at that and go, no, hey, they're great, actually.
The argument is if you're going to play well enough in the league to get fifth, fourth, whatever it could be, you're in the tournament because the NCAA committee has taken it every year. It's never taken a team that's finished.
Here's what you scheduled.
Your first 12 games you scheduled Wake.
You scheduled Maui. It was up to whatever happened.
You should get three decent games in Maui.
Could have been UCLA and Kansas and some other. It could have been
doing
a little different.
You scheduled. Exactly. You're in the Big East, Big Ten Challenge, the Gavitt, whatever, and you get a bad Creighton team that's decent but not great.
Right.
And then the Big Ten ACC Challenge, you get Duke. So there's five right there of your 12. How many more do you need? I think two or three more, because the games against Alcorn State and McNeese State are so bad. I don't want to say they're counterproductive, but you're right. That is an organized scrimmage.
Sure.
That doesn't help anything. IPFW is fine because it's a recruiting thing in the sense you're going to go up there and play them next year. It's a community service event. I get all that. It at least makes sense to play somebody in your state to that degree, or play somebody regionally. But what the problem is everybody wants to make sure they've got enough wins so that when they're recruiting at this time of year, somebody doesn't look at them and say, hey, yeah, thanks for coming to my game tonight. Why are you guys 3-6? Oh, because we play a tough schedule. Well, the recruits don't want to hear that. Coaches are CYA one, number one and number one only. They want to make sure they get 20 wins every year so they can walk into every recruit's house and say, I've had 20 wins 18 of the last 19 seasons, or whatever the numbers are going to be.
Statistically, the craziest numbers right now in college basketball. It's a Ben Simmons kid from LSU. How many games are they winning? They're losing half their games. They're going to get the coach fired, even though they got several talented players on there.
The point of the matter is everybody's looking out for number one. Is it what's best for the program? I don't know, because what's been great for the program since 1987 or 1993? 2002, the Big Ten Championship in 2013. We can pick the two things that have been good since Knight's left. So what's been getting better? I'm not sure. But if it's measured in wins and losses, you got to have wins, Jay. And right now, Indiana has a few of them, and they need to get some better ones. So that's why you schedule the way you schedule, whether it's right or wrong. If Indiana scheduled and was 3-7 and then went to the Big Ten and had quote-unquote no confidence, went 8-10, what's your record then? It's not good.
Well, then it wouldn't matter.
And
like last year. Like we were,
but the point is,
the year before when we were, crumbled at the end, but you were talking all the way in the late season how we were going to sneak in, if at all.
The point is, who you schedule at Indiana University shouldn't matter in the sense that you should win more than you lose convincingly, because you should have better players, because you have better coaching, you have better facilities, you have better home court advantage, you're better, you have better recruits and better players. Those people have to perform on the court against those handful of strong teams they play. And if not, we have discussions like this. It's not hard.
Well, again, I don't think anybody would have been shocked if we lost at Duke, but they're shocked that we lost to Wake and UNLV on neutral courts.
I think it was,
and that's
how
legit.
You lost to Duke as well after losing that one.
Absolutely. If we lost down there by 5, and sure, but you're losing by 20 and getting your doors blown off in the second half doesn't work. Got to take a quick break. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. Again, we're with you until 7:45 when the pregame for Monday Night Football takes over, heading towards kickoff at 8:30 of the New York Giants at the Miami Dolphins. And, John, I think we had some technical difficulties, so if you'd like to call back.
Call back. I screwed up. I'm waiting for you.
And that's our technical difficulty is sometimes we have technical stuff we got to figure out and don't figure it out very well. It happens. There we go. Again, 333-2665 is a phone number. Talking IU basketball, victors last week, 90-65 over IPFW, 105-60 over McNeese State, and heading up until their last out-of-conference chance to raise some eyebrows, I suppose, against Notre Dame in the Crossroads Classic this weekend, Butler and Purdue in the other game, but two very similar teams playing in this game this weekend, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You got two likes going at each other.
It's fine.
Probably going to be in the 50s.
It's a competition level. You want to see what's going on. You want to see, can you play at that level? You want to see if your stuff works after the fixes that you had to have against playing Duke, after you played Duke. What has worked? Did it work? Yeah, it worked against IPFW. It worked against McNeese State. It's going to work against Kennesaw State on the 22nd. We know all that. How does it work against a team that's played pretty well the last few years?
Yeah. And so it's a good test for them. It'll be after all of their finals are taken on Saturday up in Indianapolis on ESPN. Again, part of the doubleheader. Didn't learn a whole heck of a lot this week. Crazy number of the year for Troy is the 19 rebounds. And that's about it. I looked up Troy's statistics, and he's turning the ball over more than you would like, but he's also got more assists than he's averaged on a regular basis. Rebounds are about where they were last year, at about 6.5 a game. But the 19, that was a little kind of crazy against that lower competition. And then, of course, Yogi's 38 against IPFW scoring also. 333-2665 is a phone number. We've got John. How you doing, John?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man. Sorry about that.
Okay, I'm going to read this helps make Jay's point, which is spot on. I'm going to read you the non-conference schedule. It's 13 games, just like this year, from the 92-93 Big Ten champs when Calvert Cheney was a senior. Here it goes. Murray State, Tulane, Florida State, Seton Hall, Kansas, Notre Dame, Austin Peay, Western Michigan, Cincinnati, St. John's, Butler, Colorado, and Kentucky. And I know at least six of those teams were big NCAA tournament teams. Now, if we can play those guys then, there's no reason you should be in a rebuilding mode now that you can't play them now. And like I was telling Glass off the air, if we can go out to Pearl Harbor and play Kansas next year on an aircraft carrier, there's no reason why we can't get a home-and-home series with Kansas or someone like that, especially Kansas, because we played them before several times, once in the 70s and once in the late 80s, early 90s. There's no reason for them not to be able to do that, except they just want to duck the toughies.
You know, I agree they need some better competition on their schedule. How much is
Louisville's
it's a couple games
do that down the road?
Yeah,
that's fine.
I mean, there's a couple of them. You're going to have the ACC. You're going to have this Crossroads thing going forward. You're going to have the Gavitt games again going
forward. The
point
I didn't articulate very well last segment, and I apologize for that. I've been a bad talk show host today. The point is, you don't have to schedule guys that are last. You don't have to schedule guys that are 330, 340, or whatever the bottom of the barrel is. You don't have to do that. Alcorn State and McNeese State, you can find other teams that will be more than willing to take the paycheck that will help your process get better. Unless they feel, John, which they're never going to come out and tell you, that they need to schedule Alcorn and McNeese because they have to win games like that to make them feel better.
Was this year's better than last year's?
Pardon me?
Was this year's out-of-conference schedule better than last
year's?
Let's be fair. Last year's was awful.
I mean, awful. Awfully close
this wasn't isn't great.
Better, so that may be a little bit better this year. But I don't want to live in the past. Like Jay said, we should get past that. We should honor it and remember it. And it's great to think about and bring the guys back for the 48th anniversary, stuff like that. But when Bob Knight was scheduling people, and he was in charge of scheduling when he got here, that was one of the things he actually wanted to do. He wanted to play good teams with different styles that would get Indiana prepared for the Big Ten, and that was his big deal with the game. They don't want to do that, and all they want to do now is seem to get a W so they can say we've won our 20 games for whatever years in a row. And I just think that's the wrong way of going about it if you're actually serious about getting the Final Fours, which they should be.
You would think with the fluctuations in their schedule, you're going to get five good games a year, I would think. Five's going to be it. Do you need half? Do you need seven? Do you need eight? Do you need 10? I don't know. But what I do know is the way they have scheduled hasn't led to any results later in the year where you'd say, well, thankfully you didn't get beaten up early in the season and you came storming home down the stretch. That hasn't been the case on the other side.
Well, when was the last time they peaked late in the season? 2002, right? So, I mean, that was it. And that's what? Going to be 14 years ago.
We know it's not the same players. We know it's not the same coaching staff.
Look,
but
it was a nice finish to 2013. No, the tournament wasn't what everybody wanted.
Well, when you're number one in the country, that's not
2012
finishing well.
was decent. Great. No, it's not.
You got beat in the first round of 16 by Syracuse. That's all I need to know. And they were number one to start the season. So
That's a tough one.
Well.
That's right. Yeah. And you stroll. And again, if the matchups are the problem, it's not Indiana basketball for me. Oh, you ran into Kentucky. Oh, you ran into a bad matchup with Syracuse. Well, wait a second. Aren't we supposed to be a bad matchup? Aren't we supposed to be tough to beat?
I know, but for other people who want to get on the phone, I don't want to hog the time. But I'll leave with this and let you guys talk. When I go to Midnight Madness, not Midnight Madness anymore, it's a Hoosier Hysteria, and I see anywhere from 10 to 13,000 people out there, that tells you they think IU basketball is still relevant. There's no ifs, ands, or buts.
Amen.
They deserve better than that.
Amen.
They deserve better than that.
You ask fans to do this and do that, and you give them McNeese State and Alcorn State, and you wonder why there was 4,000 people at tip-off on Saturday night in the building.
I don't think anybody wonders that.
And I will. I'm going up to the game Saturday because the first road game I ever saw Indiana play was in December of 70 at Notre Dame when they had their brand-new facility, and Austin Carr was their best player ever. He scored 54 points on Indiana in one game. That's the record for one guy. And he had a teammate, Collis Jones, who played in the ABA, and some in the NBA had 20. They scored 103 points in a 40-minute game and still got beat by 3 points.
I was going to say, Indiana won that game. I know they won that game.
George McGinnis and Joey Wright and those guys, they were tremendous. It was exciting to watch. I like that. I like playing the Kentuckys and the Kansas. There's no reason in the world why Indiana shouldn't be picking on people their own size.
If Indiana didn't cancel the Kentucky series with Mike Davis in charge, I mean, why is it canceled now?
I would venture a guess, but
you got to remember, the fans are the people that this is their program. The program's going to be there long after administrators, long after coaches, long after Bob Knight. Bob's been gone now for 15 years. The program's still here.
Yeah.
The fans are still around. Don't forget where that bread's buttered. It's nice to put that 17-442 on the card at the end of the game when you look up and you see the picture of Troy Williams as CBS National Player of the Year, and the CBS tweets out the picture of him dunking, and all you see is the empty balcony without a seat.
Yep.
In the background, it's not hard to figure out. If you're not going to play big teams, you can't expect in this day and age of people to shell out their money. They've already shelled it out. You've sold the tickets. The tickets are gone.
Mm-hmm.
What tells you what's going on is when they don't show up. It's not that they're buying tickets.
That's all you can do.
The tickets are bought, and people aren't giving them away. Mm-hmm. They can't, or they're not going. What does it mean? It means that people don't want to watch McNeese State. It's not that people are mad at IU basketball. People don't want to go and spend 2 hours to watch you win by 100 points. It's not competitive.
And that means you're not relevant to them, really.
When we played Austin Peay in 93, did anybody show up for that game?
Pardon me?
When we played Austin Peay in Western Michigan in 1993, did anybody show up for those games?
I would have to look at
those. Yeah, but those are the exceptions.
Believe it or not, I would actually be able to tell you that, but I'm sure they did because they were a relevant program there.
Yeah, they just gotten beat in the Final Four.
Two blips. Most of the people they played were really good teams. I can take a couple cupcakes. Everybody plays low.
You have to play cupcakes because the Indiana Classic and the Hoosier Classic were all cupcakes, and that was fine.
What I'm trying to get at is, I understand people don't think much of McNeese State. I get that part. I'm not going to argue they're going to. They're not showing up because they don't like what they're seeing in general right now. Again, when they were in 92 coming off a Final Four and had the whole team back and they were fantastic and number one in the nation, everybody showed up for Austin Peay. So it didn't matter if Austin Peay was in the house or not.
But the point was,
it was 20 years ago, and it was different. People had a different attitude about it.
And they scheduled, that's the shame. And they scheduled differently. They had a different attitude about scheduling as well. So if you're going to
still showed up for Austin Peay, is what I'm saying.
If you're going to schedule bad teams in this day and age and wonder why people don't show up, okay, then keep scheduling teams like that. But here's the simple point: is what gets you better? Does losing against good teams get you better, or does winning by 50 over or 45 against McNeese State get you better? I'm guessing the answer is a little in there for both. You can't play all cupcakes, and you can't play all top 25 teams. I get all that. You have to find a balance. And again, show me where this unbalanced cakewalk schedule has helped this team down the stretch. Indiana lost what? How many games did they lose? They finished 5-10 last year, and they played an easier schedule than this. So they were.
You're also saying that, Glasses, that you don't have to play 5 bottom 10 teams.
You're right.
At the bottom of the NCAA Division One, and you don't have to do that. If you play one, that's probably.
Does everybody forget that we gave up 93 points to Eastern Washington last year? 92 at home.
Lost. Yeah.
Well, did that factor in? Did that get something canceled in McNeese State and Alcorn State on the schedule? All I know is on Saturday, Kentucky played Arizona State at 2:30, 3:30, 3:15 on ESPN, mm-hmm. and we played McNeese State at 6:30. So tell me again how Kentucky and Indiana can't play.
Don't look at me. I don't schedule them.
You're preaching to the choir there, so yeah. I don't know. I just think that there's no excuse for them not playing people. Well, the excuse is that they don't want to, obviously, but there's no excuse that's viable for them.
Right, and my point is you don't have to play number 320. You can play number 220 or number 180. If you want somebody that's not a premium opponent, I get it. Just don't find the absolute worst one.
I think the people deserve it better than what
they're
doing
right now. And don't forget about the fans. You know me. I'll never let that happen. Good job, as always.
Thanks for the call, John. Thanks, we appreciate it. We've got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. We will move along here shortly. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Again, we're taking you to 745, where Monday Night Football broadcast takes over. The New York Giants at the Miami Dolphins. Pregame 745, kickoff at 8:30. In other IU news, the football team heading to New York, not just yet, but probably next week. Pinstripe Bowl against Duke. At the new Yankee Stadium. That's the 26th on a Saturday on ABC. Should be a nice matchup. Duke's had a good couple years here under David Cutcliffe, coming from the dead. And Hoosiers at 6-6, trying to finish with a winning record, but being recognized now in the offseason as Jason Spriggs and Dan Feeney both have been recognized in some fashion or another a couple different times here as not just all Big Ten, but all American offensive linemen. So that offensive line that we watched dominate a lot of the season and against some of the better run defenses in the Big Ten and the nation, by the way, in Iowa and Michigan down the stretch, even some running against Michigan State. They have been nominated, or recognized, I should say, and good for them. They should have. Nate Sudfeld ended up the third-team All-Big Ten quarterback, which, I mean, you got to rank the guys, and you got two pretty good ones at Iowa and Michigan State ahead of you, but I didn't think anybody was much better than Sudfeld this year, especially down the stretch. His best play was on the road in the two games they absolutely had to have, and that's the best I think I've seen him play. And I won't say the most careful, but
doesn't matter. The most senior quarterback in his two most needing games, and he found a way.
Didn't make mistakes.
No, he didn't. I think that was the interesting part of it, because he could have forced it and could have tried to do too many things at once. You don't expect that from senior quarterbacks, and you didn't. He had ended up he threw for 8 touchdowns, ran for 2 more. How many picks did he have? I think the number was 0
in the last
deal.
Two games. That's
that was fantastic.
Yep.
Jason Spriggs, Football Writers Association of America. And Dan Feeney, ESPN. So guys that were overlooked in their league were not overlooked by some national media, which is interesting. And that might have a little, just a teeny tiny part to play how politics go in Big Ten football. Yeah. But you didn't hear me say that.
Yeah. No.
So it's nice to see the guys that did all those IU games at 3:34 ESPN. Those guys weighed in and said they told you what they saw. And those games were against who? Iowa, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State.
Penn State's defense was
exactly
very good.
Right. So they got a chance to see it, and those guys, again, voting for these awards is so subjective and ridiculous anyhow. I mean, there's people that probably left them off the ballot for some reason because you're too busy watching your own team, but it is nice when they're recognized. And I think this just goes back to the entire month of December on how relative and how different it is when Indiana is involved in this. Now these are things that happen when you get to bowl games.
Yeah.
When you have good players, your name appears on things like ESPN and Football Writers and the Big Ten Network when the awards are going on. It's the hardest thing to do when that's happening, and then somebody that's you're recruiting says, hey, I watched a show last night. Where are your guys at?
Yeah, and again,
well, we're recruiting you. You could be one of those guys, but it shows the next generation, or it shows the guys that are paying attention from afar, that we talk about developing players. We've shown you who we've put in the league, and now we're showing you who's getting national recognition right here at home. Tevin Coleman last year was what? Unanimous first team All-American running back? If it wasn't, he was close.
Yeah.
And again, you can talk about it all you want, but when guys do it, it's so much easier to roll out the tweets and roll out the GIFs and roll out everything else on your website that smacks you in the face and says, bowl game coming up, All-Americans.
Well, and I've said it
big
I've said
players.
It before, development. With marginal programs, you're going to get a skill guy here or a skill guy there that can put up some numbers. Think back to Anthony Thompson. And these aren't good teams, but it's Anthony Thompson, it's Vaughn Dunbar, it's
Thomas Lewis.
It's it's Rob Turner, it's Trent Green. It's the guys who are throwing and catching and running and scoring all the touchdowns that tend to get not noticed. And at a school like Indiana, we've had some where put up some crazy numbers, Antoine Randall-El. But if you can put up the guys that are up front beating each other's brains out all day long and you don't call their number every play, that tells me something about where you're going and what you're doing.
Well,
and if you got two offensive linemen, again, people don't watch the offensive line very often, but it's what drives the bus.
That's the point. And then people were forced to look at that and the hype or the preseason pointing in their direction saying, hey, our offensive line is going to be our strength this year. We want you to keep an eye on it. Those guys stood up to what their coaches thought. They came through when they had to perform, Dave. It's really easy to say, hey, look, this team's going to the Super Bowl this year because I said so. And when it doesn't, they get awfully mad at the players when it doesn't happen. Indiana's players stood up and got to places they hadn't been before under Kevin Wilson. The Colts players, well, they haven't done such things. And that's why I think some of the – I don't want to say the media is turning on them, Dave, but when you spend half of your summer and half of your August telling me how great they are and then they don't perform and get injured, well, then of course you're going to get mad. But, again, the offensive line that you pointed out from day one you didn't think was very good.
They were.
And if you see it right now and you're mad that they're getting beat, I'm not sure what to tell you.
Yeah.
If the line doesn't have the right tackle, it doesn't have a left tackle, it doesn't have a right guard, and it's not in the center positions up for grabs. So if you're mad the Colts aren't playing well right now, there's a reason Matt Hasselbeck's a backup quarterback.
Well, because
he doesn't perform 16 games in a row.
Look,
it's not hard to figure
out. The easiest
out.
Decision they made that didn't help them necessarily all that much, it's unfair to say, is bringing in Matt Hasselbeck as a backup quarterback. That's a different discussion. We'll talk about the Colts
absolutely
after the top
right.
of the hour.
But isn't
that
funny?
That.
When you perform, good things happen.
Well,
and when
course.
You don't, things usually don't. That's the issue with part of all of that. So Indiana reaping what they have done themselves, and congratulations. It's a great story. And tomorrow night, Kevin Johns, Brian Knorr with Joe Smith. So the football celebration continues, and Fred Glass will be there. Sports Talk tomorrow night live at Yogi's.
Oh, and another special guest.
Which one?
The Bucket.
Oh, The Bucket. We better tweet
Everybody
him and let him know
bucket.
That he needs to get a
don't forget the bucket
get his Uber.
Yeah, bring the bucket over. Don't forget that.
That means
one.
Deal's gonna
that's
be
the important
there.
Guest right there. We got to take a quick break. Back after the top of the hour, we'll talk some Colts as they fall apart at the seams. When we get back, 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the red zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again, with you till 7:45 when Monday Night Football takes over. Pregame at 7:45, kickoff at 8:30 for the New York Giants at the Miami Dolphins. 333-2665 is our phone number, and talking some NFL football now as the Colts. Without Andrew Luck still, we're not quite sure when he's going to get back, but you're seeing attrition all over the field, and unfortunately it's started at the one position you didn't want to have because you already, as you mentioned earlier, Glass, already not fantastic on your offensive line. Now you've got injuries up there, no Anthony Costanzo the last few weeks. It's been a struggle inside, and you've got a late-round draft pick. Denzel Good is playing your right tackle position and getting a bit of an education.
There's a reason he didn't play the first 10 games.
Or was even active the first 10 games.
Sure.
Look, he was on the practice squad. It's not a good formula, especially when your quarterback is a 40-year-old guy who was brought in to be the eyes and ears for Andrew Luck and help him decipher defenses and things he's seeing on the field. He was not brought in to play. You can remember Jim Sorgi was here for a long time under Peyton Manning because Jim Sorgi was not expected to play very often. It was going to be Peyton Manning taking every snap, every time you needed somebody just in case. And that's what Matt Hasselbeck's for, and he gave you about everything he could hope for.
He did.
Now he's got the hell beat out of him, too.
You hope if you're going to have your backup quarterback play, it's just a couple weeks, maybe three, and he gave you a really good shot in the arm during that time.
He did fine.
If Matt Hasselbeck needs to play 8 or 9 games,
no.
Well, there's a reason there aren't any other clubs signing him for $5 million a season, because he's 40 years old. He can do it in spurts. The offensive line, who played well blocking for Matt Hasselbeck when they had some injury problems and had to redo some guys, you can do that for a game or two in the league. You can't do that for six or seven games
found
in the league.
Out pretty
you can, and that's the point. People say, well, geez, why did they play so well then, and why do they play so poorly now? Well, there's a reason there's a reason Joe Wright isn't a starting left tackle on many teams in the NFL. Or any team on the NFL, because he's not good enough to do so. But he is now, because that's what you have left. And linemen don't grow on trees. You can't go down to Walmart in a big box store and buy some when you feel like it. You got to find one man's trash is another man's treasure, or you play the guys that have at least been in your system the last 3 or 4 years. Joe Wright, Matt Hasselbeck, these guys are great glue guys. They are great guys to have in a pinch for short-term problems,
right,
to help you fill out, to get guys breaks.
Play the last two quarters of a game, somebody's banged up.
Exactly right. And they do a very serviceable job of doing it. Mm-hmm. Everybody that always says, clamor for the backup quarterback, put him in, and then you put him in, and it doesn't work out.
How many backup quarterbacks are great in the NFL in the last 7 years? Not many.
Great is such a thrown-about word, it doesn't happen anymore. And if you don't have a quarterback in this league that is playing at a high level, you are not doing things well. And you want to go down the list and go division by division and point out who's got good quarterbacks and who doesn't? It's not real hard. The contrarian example of this rule is Matt Ryan in Atlanta.
Right.
Guy's making $1 million a minute
and
can't do anything all of a sudden.
Well, and they were, they were 6-0 to start the season.
Well,
too.
And they were 4-0 against the NFC East. Congratulations.
Joe Flacco's making a lot of money, and that team's falling apart.
Yes.
So there's a couple here and there.
But my point
there's
is,
there's a lot of bad quarterback play, though, also.
If you don't have a quarterback in this league, you have to have an excellent, excellent defense.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that, which the Colts have never been accused of doing, you're not going to be able to fool people week in and week out. The problem with the Colts right now, Dave, is there's nowhere to go. And the luck they've made for themselves, no Andrew jokes here, they haven't capitalized on it. You saw it in the first couple drives against Pittsburgh. They get two turnovers inside the 20-yard line. They get 3 points.
Right.
So you had a chance to be up 14-0 on Pittsburgh.
They did the same thing down in Houston, down in Jacksonville.
In Jacksonville, you get the Bortles doesn't catch the snap.
Mm-hmm.
Mathis jumps on it. They fumble the next play they have on offense, and then you fumble it back to them and go down.
Well, the only touchdown of the day was recovered.
Was
a bad
Mathis
snap. It jumped right into Mathis' lap.
You've been in you're in the red zone. You get a false start penalty. You get a holding penalty. Mm-hmm. You do this because you've got guys that aren't used to playing at this level that have to play at this level. It's not hard to find out why the Colts are losing. The part that gets me is the Indianapolis media and some of the national media that's absolutely shocked that this is happening. Where is the shock and the awe coming from?
Look, at the very
least, if
you
get beat by 1 point in both games, or you get beat by 35 points in each game, the guys that are on the field is the point I'm trying to make. This shouldn't come as a surprise.
At the very least, you can point to injuries with this team. There's no question about that. You start at the quarterback position. You go to the offensive line position. You flip over to the defense and the defensive line. Every position on the defense has got somebody banged up.
What was the only reason
at
you thought?
At some point in time, if not right this minute.
The only reason you thought the Colts would have 10 or 11 wins this year was why?
AFC South.
And Andrew Luck.
Well, yeah.
And now you don't have him.
You don't have him, and the AFC South is suddenly competitive with you. And they haven't been.
They're just
was this the
bad.
First time since 2013 that an AFC South team, or 2012, that an AFC South team has beaten the Colts?
Well, 16,
I believe that's what
16 in a row, and you play six games a year, so you can do the math on
look,
that.
Look, I said at the beginning of the season, they didn't answer some big questions on the team. It just so happens that one of those major question marks turned out even worse after the first week or two of the season, and then now in the late in the season they've gotten injured, and that's the offensive line again. They did not address it properly. Todd Harriman's is still not active for games. I mean this is head scratching to me. This is one of the big pickups, big veteran pickups they brought in. I know he wasn't brought in with a name like Frank Gore. I get that, but he was brought in to fill a position. The guy's been inactive for 10 straight weeks when the entire offensive line is beat up.
And to go right to your point, Bjorn Warner made a tackle yesterday. That's the first time he's played in six
at
weeks.
The very least, the offensive line or the outside linebacker position has been mostly healthy and mostly stocked, and so that's the position you've gotten a couple healthy scratches. Newsom was there a couple year games also. Warner's been there. Now they both have to play because there's Eric Walden's been hurt, but every position has been affected at some point by an injury. And on the defensive side of the ball, they got pushed around a bit up front, but in particular, they're going through cornerbacks like it's anybody's business.
Yep,
and outside outside of Vontae Davis, nobody can stop anybody out there.
And the thing that people forget is the Colts had a lot of injury problems last year, but they had the one injury problem they didn't have was Andrew Luck.
Hey, I turn on the game, and I'm watching, and I'm thinking, hey, that's a good-looking DB. Who's number 31 for the
41.
Colts?
Oh, 31.
31.
Yeah.
Never, I don't know that number.
Smith.
Who is that guy? I flip it on. It's not Smith. I look on
Colts. Yeah, it's the other Smith.
No, I look on Colts.com. There's no 31 listed. It turns out to be Jahleel Brown.
Oh, Jahleel Brown. Sorry,
he's 25 on Colts.com's website. The Colts' official website doesn't even have number 31 on there.
Right.
And there he is starting at cornerback.
Not the second-round draft pick from South
No, he's
Florida.
30.
Yeah.
He's 30, but I conveyed it.
I thought
30 I could find on the list.
I saw that as well. I was like, okay.
31. Who's 31?
Yeah, where did they get him from? And the other interesting part was Jacksonville's defensive back, number 41, was Nick Marshall. The former quarterback from Auburn that almost came to Indiana but went to Georgia. Or was it Georgia? Almost came to Indiana, went to Auburn as a quarterback, and then plays cornerback.
Corner, yeah. Because he's not that good of a
quarterback. And then they had old Michigan quarterback, Denard Robinson, running back for that. And then you had Allen Robinson, the Penn State wide receiver,
who
caught 100 passes. And then
a lot of good
Allen
things.
Merson or whatever that other guy's name, I couldn't remember. You saw what he did. But the Colts defense last year could rely on one thing. They had Andrew Luck as quarterback, and it just goes to show you what the effect he has on everything. Whether, you know what, Dwayne Allen's not catching any passes this year. He said he's had a bad year. He caught 9 touchdown passes last year. He caught, I don't know, 4 or 5 of them in red zone situations. Yeah, Andrew Luck finds guys. Matt Hasselbeck's surviving because the line in front of him is worse than the line Luck had last year. It's just everything is bad right now.
Look, the defense played really well in the first half of this game. They gave up 3 points. They're going into halftime, and they've been 5 straight punts, including 4 of those are 3
and
outs.
The only points they scored was a sack fumble.
Yeah, and you go into the last minute and a half or 2 minutes of the game, and it ends up being this strip sack fumble that goes the other direction to even make it a game. Otherwise, it's 13-3 Colts going into halftime. At
three
that point.
Turnovers.
They were trying to put more points on before the half.
59 seconds. At the 2-minute warning, they came out of the 2-minute warning. That's when Bortles didn't catch a snap and Mathis scored. So they kick off. They run one play. Bortles fumbles again.
Yeah.
They recover. And guess what the Colts can't do?
Give it right back.
No, I give them 7 back. Yeah. Not right back. Not a field goal. Or
give them the ball.
They just give them 7 right back. Yeah. So the momentum goes out of that. Colts lead 13-3, get outscored 48-3 to end it. Woo!
And it was everywhere area. I mean, we could say the defense gave up 48 points, or 44 points, but they didn't give it all up because there was special teams was in there. There was even more bad offense, including having to put Charlie Whitehurst out there. That's what you got right now. But
I joke Bob Irsay might have fired them all on the plane ride back home, but I think Jim's got a little bit better idea on how to do this.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. David Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Giving the post-mortem to the Colts weekend.
Bring your own gasoline.
Yeah, 51-16 is the final score in Jacksonville.
And 40, it wasn't that close.
42. Well, you know what? The Colts were dominating.
They were.
As much as you could dominate by kicking a bunch of field goals in the first half.
And that's a problem.
It was 13-3.
Yeah.
Yes, the touchdown was a defensive touchdown, but
gave one right back.
The point there is you've only given up 3 points. I mean, there were 5 straight punts, 4 of which were 3 and outs for Jacksonville. Jacksonville was doing absolutely nothing.
And remember,
so this wasn't a physical situation in the game where suddenly all of a sudden you lost 6 guys on your offensive line. You didn't have them. You started playing defensive backs up there.
Right.
This became a give up situation at some point in the second half after the strip 6, after the long touchdown to start the second half, after the long punt return for the second half. At some point in time, there was just a throw up the hands and give up.
And the tough part was Bortles is thrown the 3rd most touchdown passes in the league this year. He's not a terrible quarterback.
No, he's not.
The Colts did a pretty nice job on
him. No interceptions yesterday.
There was a tough pass interference call that didn't help that drive.
Right.
Where even Mike Pereira on his Twitter feed said, hand fighting. That's not a foul, in my opinion.
The 80 yard touchdown pass, the guy takes a gamble and misses the gamble.
And that's a 10 year safety, Dwight Lowry.
That's exactly right.
When you gamble there, you have to do two things. You have to commit the penalty,
yeah,
or you have to commit the penalty.
Well, there's two 10-year safeties there also. That's
right.
A problem.
Well, Lowry was coming over the top, and he was either going to light him up.
Adams was underneath.
Him up and take the penalty.
Right.
Take the penalty. Knock the ball down and take the penalty.
Don't let him go 80 yards.
Take the penalty.
Yeah.
Right. Give him the spot of the foul. You blew the coverage. Don't compound the fracture. And then on the punt return, you see the guy's arm right around McAfee's waist.
Yeah.
It's unlucky. Those things happen on the road.
Yeah, that's...
But he's running after him. He's trying to draw the penalty, and the guy is behind him. I'm not saying McAfee would have made the tackle.
We talk about this. When it comes to missed calls that you might have shared or maybe kind of gotten, to me, there's no chance he's catching the guy. So to me, I'm not real worried about where
he's
getting
held at
that point.
Neither am I, but it's a huge momentum because if you drop him right there,
it is something you see occasionally out of Pat McAfee, who is one of the best, if not the best punter in the league. He will sometimes outkick the coverage and they don't get down.
But and he also,
and by the way, when you've got injuries,
yeah,
where you get hurt when you get injuries,
in particular,
is special teams, because now your guys at the front line don't get their backups that are playing there because those guys have to fill in and play full time.
And it was just tough there because that's another momentum swing. What do? They get stopped. You nail a punt. You hit it 65 yards in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, I kicked it too far. And then you're trying to make a play, and a guy grabs you. Again, if that's how many times you see Joe Wright's grab a guy at the very last second before going to the ground, and boom, he gets nailed for holding when the guy's already on the ground going down.
Right.
The guy's trying to run and make a tackle.
Well, Joe Wright.
He's trying to run and make a tackle, though. That's at least trying to save a touchdown. You could argue that's a little bit different. So the Colts didn't find any breaks, didn't make any breaks, and then it was
– Yeah, and defensively – 8 plays, 80 yards, 10 plays, 69 yards, 8 plays, 57 yards. Those are 3 drives in the third and fourth quarter.
Yep. 21
and of course,
points in each quarter.
That does the business right
there. The
other
problem was the Colts offense, who had chances to take penalty, red zone penalty, red zone holding,
field
red
goal,
zone false
goal.
Start. Yep. Well, that's the whole thing.
Goals, that's all it
so
was.
Instead of having 21 points there and putting some severe pressure on Jacksonville to get out of their comfort zone, they're just putting threes on them, which gets what? Then Jacksonville can run the ball with whoever running back is alive for them. Yeldon gets hurt, put Robinson in, whatever. They didn't have to deviate from their game plan, so that kept them in a comfort level. And then when you go up 13-3 and get the fumble at 13-3,
yeah,
part of me just was like, even before this snap, I said, you know, this would be a great time to run the ball 3 times in the line. Let Vinatieri kick the field goal and get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
What happens? You try to run a pass play. You try to go for the gut shot.
And really a great play by the defensive end. It's fantastic.
And he blew up who?
But, yeah, well, Denzel Good.
Well, that was my point.
Yeah.
If you're going to run a play,
right,
you got to
right.
make sure that guy is blocked, because in that time and down and circumstance, all the momentum that you've tried and grinded out, because you just told me how many great drive stops they had, you've got all the momentum. Don't let one greedy shot wipe out a whole half of football.
Well, and
that's what happened.
About 3 plays. I mean,
well,
you can name
them.
Double
chip him
you then.
Name that
Stay play.
A guy in there and block him if you want
to
go deep.
And to be fair, they were giving up the opportunities, and we said so. They were giving up the opportunities that they had early on anyways. They went 73 yards and kicked a 25-yard field goal. They went 65 yards
twice,
and kicked a 21-yard field goal.
Those are extra
in the
points
third
in the
quarter,
old days.
They went 66 yards and kicked a 32-yard field
yes.
goal. You've got to occasionally get some scores.
I'm
and that's the difference between an Andrew Luck versus a Matt Hasselbeck. To be fair,
There's
you'd
no
like
doubt.
To think you get better out of Andrew Luck in that situation.
I'm not
but
arguing
you get,
that.
You can't lose out on all of these opportunities and think that the other team's just going to stick around
but
and play your
13
game
for 13-3, and you've just made two huge momentum plays. Fumble touchdown,
right.
fumble recovery. Block. You want to take a shot? I'm fine with that. Protect the weakest part of your line. If you need a 5-step, 7-step drop to get the ball downfield, you know you're going to have some pass protection in there. He was left alone, he was exposed.
Let me ask you the obvious question. 333-2665 is a phone number. This guy's a different coordinator than we started the year off.
Sure.
And I was more or less told, although not explicitly, it certainly is implicit, that Pep Hamilton was one of our big problems for this team earlier this year. Yes, there are injuries. We understand that. Of course, Andrew Luck is not in the game. That makes a bit of a difference, you think. But as you say, here's Rob Chudzinski doing some of the same things. I'm listening to it on the radio for a period of time, and I'm hearing Sorgi, I think it is, on the broadcast, talking with Bob Lamy about how we've got all these new formations they put back into the offense and all these different shifts and things that they're doing. I'm thinking, I thought it was simplifying that was making it easier.
But did you know what part of the simplification was that you saw in a couple of those first games? And Jack Doyle to block.
And just running the ball.
Well, when you had passing plays, you kept guys in the backfield to keep Hasselbeck up because your line stunk.
And the ball got out of there quickly. You ran the ball
yes,
better.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you. And I understand Hasselbeck doesn't have the arm strength. I understand he's playing injured. This isn't about Matt Hasselbeck. This is about the totality of it falling apart. You can't throw the ball down the field because you can't block long enough. You can't throw the ball down the field because his arm's not strong enough.
Right.
Hilton Hardy had a couple big plays. You saw him waiting for the ball. He's waiting for the ball to come down into his arms. He's not hitting him on stride and going. And that's what you do when you're 6-7. But, hey, the Colts are in first place. If the Colts beat the Texans, did you see who finished the game at quarterback for the Texans last night?
Yeah, the Hoosiers are in first place in the Big Ten also.
Did you see who finished the game for the Texans last night at quarterback? T.J. Yates.
Yeah.
Because Brian Hoyer got lit up.
Yeah.
So
he could get lit up, too.
Oh, that's my point. So all of a sudden, the Colts are automatically losing at home to Houston, a team they already beat with Matt Hasselbeck in Houston.
They've never won in Indianapolis, if you like those odds.
If the Colts win.
I like it better than being on the road
this week.
What I don't like is the way that defensive line for the Texans are playing against this offensive line and Matt Hasselbeck or Charlie Whitehurst. I'll tell you that right now.
That's fine.
Here's your question.
The point is,
you try to get Andrew Luck back in with two more games after this, or do you hope that even if you lose to Houston with Charlie Whitehurst, that you can make it up in the last 2 weeks and get some help?
The point of the matter is, if the Colts can beat Houston, and these are mathematical facts, they will have a 2-0 head-to-head matchup with the Texans.
Right.
So that will give them a one-game lead in the division. Tiebreaker is a two-game lead. So that's a huge, huge game.
Correct.
I put every apple in that basket because the Miami game is pointless. It's not a division game.
Right.
The next week doesn't matter. So it's going to come down to who's alive. Here's what happens.
Houston's got at Titans and the Jaguars at home in their last two games after the Colts game.
Both division games.
Mm-hmm.
So everything to play for in those. And Jacksonville is one game back. So don't think they're out of it. They've got nothing. They have no idea what to do this time of year.
Healthiest team. Their defense isn't as good as Houston.
They got Blake Bortles. They got the best quarterback in the division right now.
Right
and it's
now,
not
you're
even
exactly
close.
Right.
It's not even close. Who's going to play on Sunday? Who's alive to play on Sunday? The things that Colts fans, they don't hold Luck out because of drama. They hold him out because he's physically
unable to play football. Right.
So it's not like, oh, man, why are you saving him for the Miami game? It's no, they're hoping the healing process is to that point by the Miami game.
You and your conspiracy theories.
Chuck Pagano on Matt Hasselbeck playing Sunday. This is Mike Wells, NFL. Note the word available by Pagano. I fully anticipate him being available for us.
Not starting,
being available. So what does that mean? I have no idea. Is it Charlie Whitehurst? Is that the way to go?
Open auditions at 56th
but again,
Street.
How can you put any level of expectation on it if it's not Hasselbeck? If you have to start Charlie Whitehurst, you can't be upset you get beat. You're going to get beat unless your defense makes their quarterback make plays like Whitehurst is going to play. That could be a 6-3 game.
The defense played well for a half.
It could be
until everything started
game.
Falling apart.
Absolutely.
Got to take a quick break. After the break, we are not overreactionaries, but a lot of people are at this point in time.
We don't have any newspapers.
Three more games left for this Colts season. What does any of this mean for after the season? Or does it mean anything for after the season? We'll talk about that when we get back. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. You're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Just a reminder here, just a few minutes away from Monday Night Football. Pregame kicks off at 7:45. The actual game kicks off at 8:30. New York Giants at Miami. Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, live from Yogi's at the corner of 10th and Indiana, it is Joe Smith Sports Talk. He will have behind the scenes with IU Athletic Director Fred Glass, and he'll have the bucket along with IU offensive coordinator Kevin Johns and IU defensive coordinator Brian Knorr. We'll be back with you Wednesday night, 6 o'clock, right here. And then Thursday night, more NFL football, 8 o'clock, Tampa at St. Louis. That's 8 o'clock pregame. And then Friday night, we keep going with our high school basketball as the Terre Haute North Patriots come to town to face the South Panthers down on the south side. Chalk Talk, 7 o'clock. And tip off at 7:30. 333-2665 again is our phone number. Colts in a bit of a free fall right now, but still able to make the playoffs, able to win the division, have it in front of them, really control their own destiny because of the work they did earlier in the year. But of course, you got to win the games.
You do.
But here's the question. You do control your own destiny, even at 6-7 and banged up all over the place and no Andrew Luck at this point. team fell apart in the second half. I mean, there's no way to look at that and say the team did not give up
right.
in that second half. Now, it was after some plays. Do you look at this and put this as one of the nails in a coffin to
no,
Chuck Pagano, to Ryan Grigson, to any combination thereof?
No. Because if they get into the playoffs and Andrew Luck comes back and they win two playoff games like last year, I think it needs to get better. I think that's obvious. But where is the NFC East is the same thing. You hear the Giants tonight at 5-7.
Yeah.
They're in last place at 5-7. The first place is 6-7.
Yeah.
There's another division just like this. This isn't some kind of – there are more teams 6-7-ish than there are 11-2.
In the AFC South right now, the only unit that you watch, individual unit that you watch, that you really have faith in every week, I think right this minute, is the Houston defense.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know what? There's a lot of question marks.
And they gave up 27 to Tom Brady
last night.
And
you can beat them. Yeah, no, exactly right.
You can. I don't think they're this unbeatable.
Everybody else is banged up or got questions that you wonder about.
I think that just like almost like the IU football season, let it play itself out and then take a look at it. Because, number one, firing anybody tomorrow or next Monday isn't going to get you anywhere this year anyhow.
No, exactly. I don't see the point of firing in the middle of the season.
But the NFL has – it's the league, they play for pay and jobs and job security and livelihoods. You see it turn around awfully quick week to week because these aren't 18 to 22-year-old kids you got to coddle.
Right.
These are professionals with jobs on the line.
That's why you get surprises.
How many weeks do you see somebody get beat 41-0?
I mean, the Lions hadn't won a game, and they won up in Green Bay.
They've won there 25
years. Yeah, exactly.
Why is it done? Because it can happen. Why? Because guys show up every week. Guys watch film. Guys game plan differently. And again, Tom Brady isn't the quarterback of the Houston Texans.
Right.
There is not some – Adrian Foster does not have 2,000 yards rushing.
No, it's exactly right.
DeAndre Hopkins
cannot
throw the ball to himself.
Patriots are good defense, but that offense has got nothing right now, and they just lost Brian Hoyer for whoever knows how long.
And so there's your answer to that. So I think it's a fantastic opportunity. And people say, well, the Colts don't deserve to make it to the playoffs. So you get mad if they quit. But you can't. Well, which is it?
No,
you can't.
The rules are the rules.
You can't have it both ways. And these guys are going to play hard. Pagano's coaching for his job. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. When Dave and I play cornerback for the Colts, you're not going to win.
And keep this in mind.
You can't win, Rocky.
Keep this in mind. They just showed the stat in the game the other day. The last, I think, four teams that made the playoffs with a 500 or worse record all won their wild card game at home after winning
the
division.
Seattle beat the Saints. So I know that's true.
All four or three of the four, I think. So, I mean, certainly winning that first game at home is not unheard of. In the playoffs, there are going to be serious questions at some point. I think Chuck Pagano is probably going to take too much of the blame when it's all said and done, but we have to wait to see what exactly all that blame is. Because as you saw, I mean, injuries are injuries and injuries are tough, but there have been teams who have recovered from their injuries and had pretty good seasons and kept it together. No, Andrew Luck is the huge part of the entire equation.
You have to take that into consideration. If Andrew Luck was playing and this was going on, you'd have a completely different argument.
And if they get their doors blown off the next 2 weeks, the writing will be very much on the wall.
And if you get your doors blown off with your second and third team guys, I'm going to have a little sympathy for you.
Well, sure, but you don't want to.
That's what it is.
Look, the Texans were no good on offense last night, but they played their
teams that lose
off.
With non-injuries, full-bore teams, those are the ones that bother you.
Yes.
Teams that get destroyed because their third-team offensive lineman's getting destroyed, that's different.
Got to take off. We'll be back Wednesday, so tune in then, 6 o'clock. You've been in the zone.